So it's the other 9/11. Chile, September 1973. The country's military launch a coup after months of chaos, carefully orchestrated chaos, one might add. The democratically elected socialist president, Salvador Allende, shot himself in the presidential palace. Pinochet was installed, and that brutal bastard led the country for the next 17 years. In the following years, it would become quite apparent that the CIA, under orders from Nixon, had played a major role in organising the coup. It's long been rumoured that Australia may also have played a role in Pinochet's ascension. Australia's overseas intelligence agency, ASIS, were stationed in Chile at the time. Now, Clinton Fernandez, a former intelligence analyst, is trying to confirm these rumours by fighting for the declassification of key documents. Last week, Clinton appeared before a tribunal arguing against the secret testimony of Australian intelligence operatives who believed that releasing the 50-year-old documents might represent a threat to national security. Heavens above. Now, as I said earlier, these days Clinton is a professor of international and political studies at the University of New South Wales. Clinton, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Philip.
Let us remind the listener, in fact, some of them are far too young to know, how did Chile come to elect a Marxist?
Salvador Allende was a medical doctor who took a great interest in public health and then went into politics. He made a number of attempts to become president. At all times, these were blocked very heavily by spoiling operations funded by the United States. Finally, in 1970, he won a plurality of votes in a three-way race. And at that point, the United States went into overdrive to try and block his confirmation by the Chilean Congress.
Now, Nixon's response, I believe, started with a kidnapping attempt.
Yes, there were two tracks. Track one was a spoiling operation to try and convince the Chilean Congress not to confirm him as president. And, track two was just a coup. But part of the spoiling response was an attempt to convince the military to depose Allende. Now, the apolitical head of the military was General René Schneider, who didn't want to have anything to do with coups and things like that. So the aim was to kidnap him and then get pro-coup military leaders to depose Allende. The kidnapping went wrong, and René Schneider was killed in that kidnapping.
I'm sorry, who killed him?
There was a group of generals connected to the United States who were supposed to abduct him and fly him out of the country, but the kidnapping went wrong. He fired back, and then he was shot.
Heavens above.
And then the Chilean public was so outraged by this that they demanded a return to democratic processes. This weakened the will of the pro-coup leaders in the military, and so they backed off. The United States' aim then was to create a coup climate to squeeze Chile, make the country ungovernable, and give comfort and give strength to the military, the pro-coup elements, in order to encourage them to actually carry out the coup.
Now, I want to walk this back a bit. Killers were paid off by the CIA in hush money, I understand.
Yes, there was $1 million for conducting spoiling operations during the election. There was more money given, insurance, life insurance, other kinds of insurance, cash under the table, just to ensure that the kidnapping and other forms of covert operations would occur.
I'm talking to Clinton Fernandez, and let's go back now to the creation of that coup climate.
Yes. So the key thing is that when we say that we weren't involved in the coup against Allende, that's only technically true. We were involved in creating the coup climate. And when I say we, I'm talking about Australia as well. It was confirmed during the first days of proceedings at the Administrative Appeals Tribunal that, in fact, the Australian Secret Intelligence Service had been operating in Chile. that had previously been speculation and unconfirmed rumors, but it's now been confirmed. What we are now looking for are the declassification of the ACES station reports. We've got all the ACES station reports. We want most of them to be declassified.
Now, Clinton, slow down a little. What the hell were we doing in Chile in the first place?
Okay, so that's a great way to explain this. The Australian government had sent troops to Vietnam as part of the attempt to uphold American power in our region and also to show our relevance to the United States. So the same government that did that was also assisting the United States in Cambodia. And that was another coup in 1970, a constitutional coup against King Sihanouk. Now, the ambassador that we had in Cambodia, his next posting was to Chile, which is where that coup occurred. So it's basically the intelligence services are just the covert wing of what the Australian policy already was, which was support for American objectives around the world.
I think it's fair to say that in 1972, most Australians, even high levels of government, didn't know about the existence of ACES.
That's right. ACES, its existence was not formally declared until 1977 in a statement by the then Prime Minister, Malcolm Fraser. And so there were all these kinds of rumors, but now we know that ACES was involved. We understand that they were conducting operations. The precise nature of the operations, we are not interested in finding out the identities of any agents, but we want to know what their objectives were, what reports were there. And that's what ACES is trying to oppose now.
Now, let's remind the listener that Australia's involvement in Chile became public in 1977 after Gough Whitlam set up a royal commission to investigate Australian security services. And that report said, and I quote, the ACES station in Santiago was concerned only with intelligence gathering via the agents handed over to it. That was a bit of a porky, wasn't it?
Well, that's right. I'm afraid the reality is that they are saying we aren't involved in the coup, but only in some sort of intelligence liaison. Well, it's the creation of the coup climate that's the key issue, which is what brought down Allende and imposed, you know, what you said at the start, which is severe repression. In fact, the Defense Intelligence Agency report states now that the tactics and techniques that are used by the Chilean military are, and I'm quoting, straight out of the Spanish Inquisition and leave the person interrogated with visible bodily damage, unquote. And so we are acting as kind of intermediaries between the United States intelligence and the Chilean military in order to, well, firstly, encourage them to carry out the coup, but then to, you know, to be the conduit so that the CIA can have a deniable way of doing things. And that's where we step in and assist.
I hadn't realized that this was set up by Menzies, for heaven's sake.
Oh, yeah. Well, the ACES, of course, yes. But United States' interest in Chile began in that period as well, and especially in taking out Allende and blocking his numerous campaigns to become president. There were other factors involved. You know, there was the two copper giants which dominated the Chilean economy, Anaconda and Kennecott, these two corporations. And the Chileans were talking about nationalizing because they kind of relied on copper for, you know, to do other things in their economy. But they didn't own their own economy in that sense. So they wanted to nationalize it. And Nixon wasn't concerned so much about those two companies, but he had a more imperial attitude, an imperial grand strategy, which is that the big problem, he says, is that if we can't stop Allende reforming his economy, it'll indicate a failure of our capacity and responsibility as a great power. And he says that, if other countries think they can move like Chile, we'll be in trouble. No impression should be permitted to let Latin America think they can get away with it. And he says, it's too much the fashion to kick us around. Let's kick the United States around by nationalizing their economy and doing things like that.
Let us interrupt or punctuate proceedings, Clinton, by going back into your own past. I think it's interesting for the listener to know that you are yourself a former intelligence officer. Can you riffle through your CV for me?
Well, I joined the Australian Army in 1990, went into the infantry, then Duntroon, became an officer, got into signals, then intelligence corps, and got my doctorate, and I'm now teaching at a university.
Okay, so let's go back to Chile. When Allende was surrounded by the coup leaders and he took his own life,
yes,
how big a catastrophe was that regarded internationally?
It was regarded as a great victory if you were supportive of the United States' imperial relationship with Latin America. But it was regarded also as a great disgrace by many people around the world. And in fact, that did come back to haunt the United States. The COVID operation, the overthrow of what was, let's face it, a democratic election followed by a coup, and the specific attitude of the person who replaced Allende, Pinochet, you know, was a kind of an embarrassment for the United States. And then there were Senate inquiries, you know, by the Church Committee in the United States, which is what led to congressional oversight of the intelligence agencies in the United States. We don't have anything like that in Australia. In Australia, the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security, by its own charter, cannot examine any operation, past, present, or proposed. You know, Parliament has specifically said it's going to leave everything to the executive branch of government. And so the only way you can get information about this is 50 years later through the Archives Act.
Okay. Now, we had the boss of the National Archives on the other day, and I was being quite sympathetic to their economic plight because, as you know, they're being treated very harshly in budgets.
Yes.
But the National Archives are required to release most records after 20 or more years.
Yes.
Unless they're deemed exempt. And that is what can only be on the basis of national security.
Yes, it's a harm to, well, there's more than one exemption, but it's harm to defence, security and foreign relations of the Commonwealth. And also, of course, things like if information has been given by a foreign government to us in confidence, then we have to preserve that confidentiality, provided the foreign government still wants it kept confidential. We support that. Those of us who have been fighting at the National Archives, we support all those exemptions. But what we say is the real test should be harm to our security today, not embarrassment about that. And that harm should not take the nature of embarrassing us when we talk about good international citizenship and a rules-based international order. In that sense, the truth should fall where it may.
Now, if you don't have a security clearance, you shouldn't be listening to LNL on your radio, on digital, and from wherever you get your podcasts. You shouldn't be hearing Clinton Fernandez, the good professor, who was before the courts last week fighting for the declassification of documents that may unmask Australia's involvement in the coup. Clinton, you first applied to view the files about 4 years ago?
Yes, I did, in 2017. And it took a while.
Did you expect trouble, or did you think?
Oh no, expect trouble. Yes, of course, always. But that's the point, right? You want to go for the things that that matter. Otherwise, you're simply writing out a press release that the government hands out to you.
So, what were you given? Just a run around?
Well, initially, but this is not just one declassification request. It's Cambodia and Chile. Because it's the same ambassador, Noel Deschamps, who was in Cambodia, then wound up in Chile. And so ACES is operating in both countries as a way of supporting the United States' operations. So in Cambodia, they said they refused to confirm or deny the existence of records on Cambodia. And there was similar stonewalling on Chile. But, you know, the aim is simply to find arguments and to be persistent. I was very lucky that I've had a barrister called Ian Latham and a solicitor called Hugh Mackin, who who've stuck with me for the last decade, I don't think they knew it was going to take him this long.
I'm glad you mentioned Deschamps, because I recall him as head of the Monarchist League.
Yes, that's right. He was the head of the Monarchist League. In fact, after Chile, he was there in Chile for the first few years, and in fact during the coup. And then that was his last posting, I think. After that, he went away and he probably got involved in other things. But it's the same consistent pattern of upholding the United States-led order, which is we call a rules-based international order, but which I think a neutral observer would probably see as an imperial order. And in that sense, we are not merely a middle power. We are a sub-imperial power that upholds that order willingly and participates in operations far afield in order to uphold it.
Why did you decide to take the case to the Administrative Appeals Tribunal?
Well, the aim is simply to work out Australia's role in the world. We have a right to find out what the government is doing. And even 50 years later, it just seemed an obscenity, really, to hide this stuff from the public. If the government feels that the public, which elected them, would disapprove of them for doing these things, then maybe he shouldn't be doing those things in the first place.
There's wonderful spooky stuff here. There are confidential affidavits from three people, one from ASIO, another from ASIS.
Yes.
An ex-by now and DFAT. And the ASIO and ASIS officers provided evidence under assumed identities.
Yes. So this is how the case works. The government is allowed under the Act to have a certificate provided by the Attorney General, which excludes everybody from the room, including myself, and not just the public. And so the government, the intelligence agencies can make their case in secret. They also allow intelligence agencies to testify under a pseudonym. So we are not allowed to know the identity or hear the voice on some occasions, or see the face on other occasions, of people who are testifying by remote under a pseudonym. And if you ask certain questions, then they say, well, I can't tell you this. We have to go into closed session for that. And of course, we are not in closed session for it. And so the entire thing is the creation of an atmosphere of great alarm that, the slightest wrong word would cause Australia's security today to be harmed.
Well, yes, that's true, but it's also pure Monty Python. Where does the case stand now? I understand some files have been declassified over the course of the trial.
Oh, yeah. In fact, we've been very, very pleased with one aspect of this, which is that they actually gave us a whole bunch of documents, which I looked at overnight after the first day. I guess they realized that the original position was simply unsustainable. And so after I analyzed the materials overnight, my lawyers made submissions the next morning. So we basically got a confirmation now that, ASIS was there, it was conducting operations. We know such things as the difficulties they had in buying cars, the safe that they had to get. One declassified document reveals the combination of that safe, for example. And there's other things in there about notes on Chile. I don't want to trivialize it, but there are several mentions about how beautiful Chilean women are and things like that. It's just it's a good read.
Now, you label the relationship between the US and Australia as, and I quote, a transactional arrangement between two unequal partners.
Yes.
That's understating it, isn't it?
Oh, well, actually, it reflects reality, but it goes against the popular conception of great mateship and bonds of shared values and things like that. No, I think at its core, what the evidence shows is that it is a transactional arrangement between unequal partners. The United States does not think much about Australia. We think a lot about us, about the United States. When I say we, I'm talking about the strategic policymaking community. And the key aim then is to constantly keep doing things that show our relevance to the United States. So you just take Afghanistan. What happens in Kabul or Kandahar was irrelevant. What really mattered was American congressmen, women, and politicians and leaders and so on should come to the Australian area of operations, see what we are doing, and appreciate us. And that is going to be in play once again in the Taiwan Strait. It is basically a transactional arrangement between unequal partners, and the great fear of our strategic policymakers is that we will stop being relevant to the United States. If, for example, South Korea or Indonesia became more powerful, then they know that the United States would simply pick them as the partner.
Clinton, we've got to go. Thank you. Clinton Fernandez, Professor of International and Political Studies at the University of New South Wales.